Good day, Northwest Indiana. It's May 11th, 2023, and coming right out of Chesterton, Indiana, I'm your host, Becky Mattea Lombardini, and I have a very special guest, Dr. Larry A. Breckner. I just want to see if I can find out what the A is. He usually does the interviewing, but I am interviewing him because I have a Conversations with Community Voices on WVLP where we met. So, Larry, I'd like to see just how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great, and a pleasure to be on Conversation or Convos with Becky.
That's right. I shortened it up, and Paul's like, what is that? And I'm like, it's just my, like, hip kind of way of, like, reaching all the you know, millennials, because, you know, I have three of them. It's not easy. So I do Conversations. It's typically on Mondays. There's a couple of other co-hosts on that night. Mine usually runs the third Monday. So that's this next week, but I had a surgery, so I've taken off a couple of weeks here. Larry does Art on the Air, plus is a board member. So why don't you give me your, I love that at our meeting, your 1 minute elevator speech on yourself.
Okay. Well, I am involved in quite a few things. I'm retired. I'm a retired theater director. Did that for about 40 some years. I was with the school system in Highland for 13 years as the auditorium and then theater director. Moved to the Center for Visual Performing Arts for the professional theater. I actually was like they called it a theater administrator, but I managed the theater operation, was production manager for On Stage the Center, which is a concert series, and our professional theater. I was there for 6 years. And then the school system in Munster had just renovated their 1,000-seat theater, wanted to put a professional face on it, and made me an offer I couldn't refuse, hired me in a 1998 to come there and do that. I unified the theater program. They had a separate drama club and musical and combined that. And over the years, we ended up doing two productions a year, musicals and then two straight plays. My wife, who was my associate director, also directed with me, plus also did middle schools. And we did about 60 events a year in the theater until I retired in 2016. So that's just a thumbnail of my theater career. And then I got involved in several things. I've been involved with Lakeshore Public Media, and we can talk more about that later, for 30 years and talk about that. I've been involved with arts organization. I'm a fine art photographer, so I'm on the board of like Lakeshore or on Chesterton Arts Center, and been involved with the Regional Arts Council. And so that's just a quick elevator speech of some of the things I've done. And when I first retired, I also did some teaching for Purdue Northwest, some classes there, and also worked for IUN to help set up their theater operation. So that's kind of my quick elevator speech.
So when we were preparing, I said, Larry, so are you officially retired? And you said, yes. And I'm like, but you probably do as much now as you did when you were, quote unquote, working.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, people say that to me. And I said, yeah, I do have a busy life, because I don't think retirement means, you know, you're just, you know, preparing for your graveside ceremony. So I really think that being busy is a part of it. I take my philosophy of life from the musical Pippin, and there's a song in there that's sung by the grandmother. And I said, I believe if I refuse to grow old, I will stay young till I die. So I think that's kind of my philosophy of life, how I deal with things. But let me give you a quick thumbnail of my day. I would go in at 8 o'clock. I was also classified as administrator, so I had administrative responsibilities when I was at Munster, in charge of the electronic keying system for the entire district, oversaw the operational calendar for the high school, and also I worked on the district calendar for the year. So I had other things I also approved, like fundraisers, things that was separate from my theater things. And then theater, usually at 3 o'clock, we were almost always in rehearsals. So 3 o'clock, we'd do rehearsals until 6, we had a concert that night. We flipped through the concert event and things like that. There were days I worked 21 days straight in December and May. Weekends I maybe didn't go in at 8 o'clock, so not quite that busy. So while I am busy, I do have a little more time off.
So I would, thinking about you and getting to know you, because we met about maybe a year plus ago at the station out of Valparaiso,
right.
Which you can listen to on 103.1 or streaming or TuneIn app. I mean, I think when we were at the meeting at Lakeshore Public Media, we were talking about all these platforms now, because it's not just radio, TV, but it's going beyond that. So we were debating how we were going to actually even use this. So I'm just happy that we're doing it. But thinking about you, I would say it's performance, media, and photography. And I'd like to take you back all the way to when you were a kid. and how you started to think about this. And you were in Highland, correct?
Right.
That's where you grew up, and you've been out here about 5 years. But go back and tell me a story about, like, wow, this is what I want to do.
Well, I grew up in Highland. I was actually a lifelong resident until 2015 when I moved to Chesterton. We found our dream house here on the little Lake Palomora. But I always thought, my initials, LAB, lab, I always thought I had a strong interest in science and technology. And so I kind of thought I would go into science or some sort of technology. I was always interested in, my dad was an amateur radio operator. I eventually got my license. So I was always interested in radios and technology. That was kind of the computers of its era, though I was an early adopter of computers. But through school, I kind of did that. And actually, when I looked at, I was involved with several other things when I was in high school. I did play tennis. I wasn't the greatest tennis player, but, you know, I did letter in tennis. So, you know. I always say that love, you know, tell tennis players, you know, love your opponent, and they kind of look at me for a minute, and then they get the joke. So, but kind of talking about some of my background too. My mom was a musician, mostly a church organist, pianist, and things like that. And her vision for me, I think, was always to be a musician. So I did start piano lessons at 5, and then it switched to organ, and then later to trumpet. And I stayed with that until high school when I sort of discovered theater. So, and I came to theater in a technology mold, doing lighting and sound work. So I was more of a techie in theater when I first got into it. And so that became it. But I didn't really think of it as a career. So when I went off to Purdue, then Calumet, I actually was going to be in engineering, but I was also working full-time, so full-time shift work, and so I couldn't quite, I don't know, and I didn't know if I really loved it, and especially did not love the math. I remember sitting in that first integrated calculus with analytic geometry class, and I said, oh my gosh, this is not for me. And
it's brutal.
It is brutal, and math was never my super strong suit. I mean, basic math is, and geometry, I'm a whiz at in trigonometry, but yeah, I was like thinking, this may not be for me, but I always had strong communication skills, so I switched over to communications, basically in radio, television, production, management, and so worked on that and there and did quite a few things in undergraduate and things like that. I remember one of the fun projects I worked with my cohort, Dave Ennis, who's still a local guy. We did a spoof takeoff on Star Trek called Star Trek. And the two requirements for the production were that we had to use students from the performance class, which they were not necessarily actors. And it had to have something to do with Purdue Calumet. So what we did is we had the actors come in and they intercepted these two guys from the 20th century and they beamed them aboard because their ship was going to go in, and they had a special rocket fuel development that was at Purdue Calumet, and so they had to go back in time. And so we actually did, and I'll talk about my pilot's license, but I had my pilot's license. What we did is we took a shuttlecraft, went up in the plane, and actually shot video of looking like the shuttlecraft flying through Chicago and landing at Purdue and then cutting away students watching it land. Anyway, it was just a silly story, but anyway, they go through it and then resolve that. And so
you have that on video somewhere?
Somewhere. I have to dig that out. Yeah.
That would be really cool.
That was on the 2-inch tape days and everything. But yeah, we did like beam aboard effects, which actually was very simple to do. We took the people that we shot with one camera and took another camera from a different angle and just electronically faded between it and made it look like they were actually. So we did a lot of, that was a fun undergraduate. It was kind of progressive for its time because most people were doing an interview with the police chief about parking or some, you know, junk like that. We did something like that. Anyway.
Very creative.
In 19...
You know, I was over there. Now it's Purdue Northwest. The big sell was going on. So any kind of creative ideas like that, you could actually probably propose, and they give $10,000.
Sure. Well, that could be.
I had an idea for you, Larry.
Well, I'm going to let other people approach me about producing. So anyway, so then I graduated and took me, you know, longer than most because I was going part-time in 1979. Now,
can you tell me what were you working at shift work?
I was working on the Maryville Police Department.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, these are interesting tidbits that nobody else knows, but only can get on.
It was my college job, so I didn't really think I was going to. I thought about maybe making a career, but, you know, get my degree and maybe go into like DEA or, you know, ATF or something like that. But I don't know. I'm not probably a hard ass enough to do that.
That's so, correct. I would say so.
But anyway, in 1979, the school where I graduated from, Highland, was looking for an auditorium director. And I hadn't finished my degree yet. They had someone in there that was an auditorium supervisor, kind of a younger guy, and wasn't really working out well. So I said, well, you know, they hired me in 79, and I hadn't finished my degree. So they technically, I was an auditorium supervisor until I finished my degree in 80. But what I did is then organize how the theater was operated, and I brought the concept of an auditorium staff, where the student staff wasn't a loosely thing, was actually organized. And you started out as an apprentice, you trained, and then you became a full crew member. You served this apprenticeship. From there, you can apply for upper-level jobs. And it worked like a job structure, because I wanted them to have actual positions, because as a director, I can't be in every place at once. So That's why, you know, I believe in strong delegation. And I'll talk more about that later as I develop it further. But then also they had separate programs there. They had a drama club and a choir musical and Never the Twain Shall Meet. And one of the things I'd sometimes navigate between the two groups is they had – this one had their wood pile and I have my wood pile. And anyway, long story short, I had the opportunity to – unify that under a program, rename it, and call it the Highland Theater Company. And the idea was it was very open and inclusive, and so organized a little bit better. We then upscaled the shows to two musicals a year, and I think I only did one production. And then we kind of developed the middle school show a little bit. My wife kind of came in and was my help direct for associate direct with me on those things. Anyway, so I was there for quite a few years. Meantime, I was also working on my master's degree in the interim. So I was working on that. And then one thing to kind of dial it back, one of the things I did in the 70s that we kind of skipped over is I also ran a small four-track recording studio and called Lab.
Because you're in your own studio right now, which is not it,
but Lab recording studio. We mostly did remote things and demos, but part of that process in the thing is I did one, I think it was Ron Martinez and Time or a couple others that were actually commercially released. And I'll tell you my Grammy story. So I was watching the Grammy.
That's my favorite.
I was watching the Grammy Awards with Christopher Cross, 23rd Grammys, and he won 6 Grammys for Sailing. Great song, but I'm like, 6 Grammys? So a few days later, I called the Los Angeles office of the National Academy of Recording and Sciences. What's the requirement to become a voting member for the Academy? And at that time, it was you had to be creatively involved in either 6 singles, and this is like records, or a side of an album. I said, well, send me an application. And because some of the stuff I'd done was commercial release, they're not any big hits, and I'm not, you know, mystifying that, you know, I'm any big shot or anything. But anyway, I applied. $50 later, I was a voting member for the Academy. So I went to my first awards in the following February, the 24th Grammy Awards. For some stupid reason, I got seated in row 13, not dead center, but still kind of in the celeb section. And, you know, I have no illusions about, you know, where I fit in the industry, but I did meet a lot of people. And I call it on a handshake. You know, I don't say, oh, I met so-and-so, and, you know, we're old buddies. But, you know, I did meet a lot of people. The couple of funny ones is when Sheena Easton that year won for Your Eyes Only, you go to a party afterwards, and it's a closed party. I could almost not understand her. She was so excited with her Scottish accent because, you know, hear her singing, you don't hear that as much. But, yeah, I met a lot of people that way, you know. And the other one I thought, and I'm not really a fan of his music, but Alice Cooper. And he refers to Alice offstage in the third person. And he won the first, like, short video award for something he did. And he was very, very intelligent. Said, well, you know, I had Alice do this. And, you know, it was always about that.
And you're like, huh?
Well, no, I got what he was saying. Alice to him is a character that he plays and not him. And
yeah, well, I'm always a bit confused when people start doing that until I figure it out. But this was one of my biggest questions. Like, who did you see? Continue on, please.
Well, I met a lot of people there. And I guess, you know, John Denver had been the host there. The funny part about the whole ceremony is you're sitting there, and then when they go to commercial, they play the music. Da, 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 and as soon as the music stops, everyone's up out of their seats running around, and it's like hilarious. And when they come back from commercial, there's still people up, but they get the close up on the host. And now we're going to continue with such and such blah, blah, blah. And everyone's scurrying back to their seats. So it's great. So yeah, it was a great experience. I went several times. I took my wife at the final time we went. The one problem I went on the last time.
When was that?
Let's see. I went to the 24th, 25th, 26th, probably the 27th Grammy. what they radio stations had started doing is giving away tickets to the Grammys and the private party thing afterwards, the big party. So a lot of the celebs stopped showing up to the party. They went to their own private parties because you had basically guys running around in powder blue tuxes chasing autographs. And I, you know, I'm not that. And I don't do autographs. I don't necessarily do pictures. If you don't believe me, I don't care. You know, I met people and I don't like to go down through laundry lists. And again, I met them on a handshake. They were nice to me and everything like that.
You're listening to Good Day NWI/Conversations with Community Voices. I'm Becky Matea with special guest Larry A. Breckner on WVLP 103.1 FM, Valparaiso. Are you going to go back? And why did you stop? And can you go back? Do you want to go back?
Yeah, I can. I can go back. It's just that I'm not as involved. I'm not as involved with the industry, so to speak. And
Do you still vote?
Oh yes. In fact, in 2016 or 17, I received a certificate from the Academy say that I have a lifetime voting member, which means I don't have to pay dues anymore because I've been a continuous member since I joined in 1980. So yes, and I'm still connected to people, and I'm mostly in the indie arts called FYC. On Facebook, and I've interviewed actually quite a few of them on Art of the Year. One of them is Wouter Kellerman, who's a Grammy Award-winning flautist, and we interviewed him when he was actually in New Zealand. He's from South Africa making an album, and so we use Zoom, of course, to do our interviews, and so yeah, we interviewed him, and there's others that we've interviewed, like from the Grammy world. So I'm kind of connected with the FYC, and they keep saying, you need to come out to see us in Los Angeles when we do the next thing, so I might still go sometime. I just haven't. What's funny,
right. It's a date.
Yeah, the $50 ticket that got me to the Grammys and also to see the big party afterwards, that now is $250 just to go to the awards for a member ticket and $250 to go to the party. So it's a $500 ticket now, but $50 back then got me into both, and it was really something. But the Grammy experience was nice, and it keeps me in touch with music and everything. So anyway, that's kind of a side wheel to where my career line. So I don't know if you want to prompt me on, or I can just keep going.
Yes, no, I can prompt you on. I've got a whole list here.
Okay.
So you so that was kind of your early Highland life, right? And then now take me into after college. What happens next?
Well, I finished my degree in 1980, my bachelor's in radio TV production management, and of course I was working at Highland, and so I worked there until 1992, and I started doing. I also did a lot of freelance lighting for local groups, mostly theatrical lighting for a lot of groups and things. So I did lighting design as my other field besides directing and producing. But in 1991, 92, the Center for Visual Performing Arts needed someone to come in. They had these commercial shows coming in, and no one to do it. So they brought in like the Chieftains, and you know, for their On Stage at the Center series, and I
Dixie
was all
Chicks.
That was a little bit later. But after the early thing, they saw, they said, well, you know, we might be interested in hiring you. And so thinking about it, I said, okay, I might go, because I'd be into, at that time, a semi-professional theater operation, bringing things in development. So I left the Highland and went to the Center for Performing Arts.
Which is in Munster. Pretty
Munster.
Close.
Yeah.
But beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful facility. And you still are active with them? You know, so in one way or another?
Not really, no. I worked there from 92 to 98. But during that time, I was part of the development that the theater at the center was a semi-professional theater, became an equity theater in that period of time, which means it's professional actors and things. And it was a slow process to do that. We did mostly summer productions, but also we then had events, some rental events, and then we had series of things we brought in, like people that remember Dark Shadows, we brought in Jonathan Frid, Barnabas Collins, and he did some dramatic readings, and I don't know, several.
Were you there when I went to see Mark Twain with the kids in grade school? There was a gentleman who performed Mark Twain.
What year was that? So I was there from
10 years ago.
No, I wouldn't have been there.
10, 15 years ago. Okay. All right.
Yeah. We had lots of different things like that. But anyway, we had a whole range of people that came in there for different things. Hal Linden, people remember. We had Mark Russell, who just recently passed away. He did the political piano thing.
Yes.
Paula Poundstone. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned Dixie Chicks, but that was the older Dixie Chicks when they were just starting out, and that's when they had Robin Lim Macy as their lead singer, and they were literally just starting out back then. And I remember the sisters were very, very shy and everything, but we had some classic mm-hmm. things, like we had the Capitol Steps and Kingston Trio. We had Joel Daly, who used to be on ABC 7. He did his country music act.
I remember him.
And,
oh, he did. He was a performer too. Besides,
oh yeah, this was after his broadcast career. But he also had a group that he came out and they did like country like music. We had Ray Price come here. I have a quick story about that. Is they have a thing they call their technical writer, and what your technical writer is tells you all the specifications they need to have their show. And they had the one I got it. This thing was for a stadium size performance. I mean, huge speaker stacks and everything. So I contacted the guy. I said, you know, this is a 450 seat theater. I said, we have to have that. We have to have it. Ray will want that. Anyway. So long story short, we ordered as much of it as we could squeeze in the theater. Ray shows up and says, well, he said it with a swear, but he said, what is this stuff? I mean, because it just dwarfed the stage and everything. And so I'm not going to take the hit on that. I said, well, your guy told me we absolutely had to have it. And the thing was like, I think we ended up paying like $5,000-$6,000 to have the sound imported in. So, yeah, so that was some of the things. We had Kingston Trio, Justin Kolb. So, yeah. And so
I can relate to strong demands of performers and others.
Well,
we just did the NWI talent show. So, and I was going to say, we would have loved to have had you as a judge, but we had already had the judges. But in the future, I think I mentioned the cook-off to fight drugs.
Right.
And you're a judge. And we're going to have performers there as well. But I think you're going to be judging the cooking. How are you with that?
Well, I am kind of the home chef in my house.
There
so, you know, of course, I become the air fryer chef, so to speak. You know, my wife bought an air fryer years ago, and, you know, she bought me these different appliances to do things. And I did a lot of, and I said, oh, yeah, I use it every day. And in fact, I bought a second one, larger one, that I do larger things like ribs and stuff. But I do like everything with lobster and everything like that. So, yeah, that's
very handy. Very handy. All my kids have those. So it's very, very, nice to use.
Well, yes. Some of the other things at Theater at the Center we did is during our thing, we also brought in some celebrities when we were making the development to professional theater. Lee Pelty, who was famous for doing Fiddler on the Roof and Man of La Mancha, he was there. But some of the ones that we really know is Lee Merriweather, who was in Barefoot in the Park, Margaret O'Brien, she was in Arsenic and Gold Lace, she was the one from Meet Me in St. Louis, and Nanette Fabre. And we had her in to do On Golden Pond. And anyway, her story is that, you know, a lot of the board members were taking her out to show her off to her friends. And but we said, and she goes by Nan. I says, Nan, why don't you come over for a nice quiet dinner with the family? So we did that. And she told us these great stories and everything. That was just wonderful. She was in her first film was with Elizabeth in Essex, which was a Errol Flynn, Betty Davis film. And she played one of the courtiers and she was supposed to sing. Anyway, Michael Curtiz was the director. And she had just paid for having braces put on her teeth, which were very expensive, you know, in that era. Anyway, yeah. Michael Curtiz came to her and, you know, I can't remember if he's Hungarian. He said, you cannot have those things on your teeth in my film. So she had someone in the studio with pliers remove her braces that she'd paid all this money for.
But it's got to be painful.
Well, yeah, you know. So anyway, that was a cute story, but it was a nice quiet evening where she told us a lot of things.
Have you ever thought about writing a book?
Well, maybe at some time, you know, I'm not dead yet. So I
want to, when I'm old, that's what I keep telling people. When I get older, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm getting older. So I better start on doing some of these, plans that I have.
Right. And you know, again, a lot of the people that I've met, you know, if you want to hear my stories, that's fine. If you don't, I mean, I'm not one of these people that say, well, I know so-and-so, no, you know, I had the privilege of meeting. Was a cute story about Lee Merriweather. She was actually in that show in my last days at the center, and people might remember her from being a Miss America, but
she was a Miss America.
But I remember her from the show Time Tunnel, you know, and she teased me, says, oh, guys in your generation remember me from that, you know, because it was only on for like 2 years. But yeah,
didn't she also play in Barnaby Jones?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She was
the secretary.
But, anyway, in 1998, the school system in Munster, they had just renovated their theater, and we talked a little bit about this before, but they wanted to put a professional face in the operation. They invested this huge investment in installed orchestra pit, a fly space. They really upgraded the facility, and they wanted someone to really be in charge of it. And so I left the center in 98 and started in the school system and, you know, kind of reorganized how things were done. I put things on a schedule. The biggest thing I did as auditorium director, besides establishing another auditorium staff with students, is that we schedule things that they weren't what I call checkerboard scheduling. For example, like let's say we have a series of concerts. We would have a choral concert, then we flip to a band concert, to another choral. What we do is I would schedule like like we got, eventually I got all the elementaries to come bring their shows in. I'd schedule all the elementaries the same week because it's same basic setup. Maybe the next week I would schedule all the instrumental concerts, orchestra, band, junior high band, da, da, da. So we have a similar setup. Yeah, you have some different chair configurations, but also you don't have to redo the light because otherwise you're doing, okay, you flip this setup, then you have to go to this. So I eliminated that, and that's how I inherited the job of scheduling everything else in the school, except for athletic
facilities. I like you, Larry. I like you. I think you do have – that is a very scientific type of mind where you are more like quantitative than always qualitative. I love that. Keep going. Well, so you've got the whole school now.
Yeah, so I've got doing that, and then I inherited the because I'm kind of a – still a techie guy in heart, and I inherited the IntelliKey system, which was for the whole school district, except one school was still on the old manual keys. And so you program every user's keys, and you have the specific things you program them for and everything. And then you have to, occasionally you have to go around to each door and reprogram them or take care of facilities. But anyway, that became my job because they wanted someone. I was classified as an administrator there, but I don't have an administrative license, so I can't like evaluate anybody. So I had all these other job says, well, let Larry do it. He's
well, they're very important. Then it keeps everybody else. So I always tell folks, you have to have rules or it becomes chaos.
Oh, yeah. And that's what it was. It was always chaos. You would have, and this happened even when I first was there. We had a band concert set up. And then before I'd unified the theater room, the then drama director came in and it's, the expression is struck. They took down the setup for the band because someone said, one of her kids said, oh, yeah, they had a band concert last night. And I said, no, there's another concert tonight. And there was that type of thing. I eventually got to the point where I basically pretty much locked everyone out and they had to clear it that way. But also one of the things I'm proud of, we got up to about 60, 70 events a year with internal, about 15 to 20 of those were rental events. We had Hal Linden come in there, Daniel Rodriguez. He's the singing policeman. I don't know if you remember him from the 9/11 thing. John Davidson was there. Susan Egan, the original Belle from Beauty and the Beast. And the cute story about that is she came in to do her concert, The Best of Broadway. And that spring, we were doing Beauty and the Beast. So I had my Belle, the young actress in high school, and they did a picture together. We had the Joffrey Ballet, Purdue Varsity Glee Club's there several times, Glenn Miller Orchestra.
I love them. I love them. I just heard about them at LaPorte.
Right.
Keep going, Glenn Miller.
So anyway, those are some of the things it did. And of course, I said before, we upgraded to two musicals, two plays, two middle school plays. I was a big believer. Again, I reorganized the auditorium staff. And I always told my students I said, when you're working for me in that mode, you are not just, you're not a student, you are a staff member. So I hold you responsible for your area. So we actually established a regular house staff that took care of all the front of house operations. It's very organized and, there was a chain of command and everything like that. And that's how it worked. I also was a big believer in full student directing plays. So two of the plays that we did every year were student directed. I produced them. And to get to that directing thing, it wasn't me sort of super directing. They had to go through a process of working as a student director with me, my wife, and everything like that. And so the novice play, I established that as one of the plays, and that was for freshmen and sophomores or juniors, seniors have never been on stage before or no major role on stage. And that was to get younger ones a chance to be in a show by themselves. And that was a student directed show. And that was usually our first show. And then the middle show was that. Then our how we linked that to the middle school is my wife had student directors for her. What we like to do is, especially in one of the two plays, but usually her spring or I guess winter production, that student director we would strongly encourage to be the novice director in the fall here. So the incoming people from the eighth grade, now freshmen, would have connection to that director. So that was some of the things we did.
Great system. Very good system. I like the way you work the profession, but here's my final in this 30 minutes. Out of everything, all of those productions, what was your favorite?
That's like asking me which one of my children are favorites, but I do have some. I really do. There's ones that have touched me in my life. Some people said, what's your favorite ones? I'll tell you the ones I don't like that I've worked on. And I always say, well, what musics do you hate? I don't hate. And most of my life is musicals, but I've never been a big fan of Little Abner, Kiss Me Cake, Bye Bye Birdie, and most what I call junk box musicals, which are kind of the current thing. Musicals I think are somewhat overrated are Rent, Hair, Jesus Christ Superstar. They all have great music, but their books are kind of weak. Mm-hmm. But musicals that I think that are underrated is The Secret Garden, City of Angels, and The Children of Eden. And the musical I love, or two of them, has to do with parts of my career. Carousel was the first musical I worked on when I was in high school, and I directed it years later. There's something about that. It was the second major musical that Rodgers Hammerstein did. And the musical working, based on Studs Terkel book, Stephen Schwartz brought the music together. That was the first show that I actually ever directed, and I've done it like four times over the time. It's real people talking about the real story. Musicals I cherish, Fiddler on the Roof. I worked on that in high school, but directed it several times. And The Sound of Music, which has a quick story to it in that, I worked on it. I did lighting design for many times, but when I was at Highland, it was the second time I directed it there, I put my four-year-old daughter in as Gretel, and she did great and everything. So it's kind of a neat thing. She went on to do Sound of Music in several productions and one professional production at the center. So that musical also I can listen to on repeat. It's like Pippin, Into the Woods, City of Angels. And ones that keep me laughing all the time are The Producers. And Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And just to talk about the musicals that changed, so what wasn't my favorite is Oklahoma was the game changer. It established the narrative form of music, meaning that the music emanated from the story and there was an actual solid book, and then the dances moved the story forward. Up to that time, it didn't quite work that like that. Mm-hmm. And Hammerstein had actually previously in Showboat invented the what I call the what if song, a future tense love song that would appear in Act One. So in Showboat was only make believe, I love you. In Oklahoma, people will say we're in love, and so on. So If I Loved You from Carousel. All these were in Act One and then reprised in Act Two as them actually saying they love each other. That was an invention by Roger Hammerstein, and that was a major.
What a great one.
And so that
was a great one.
And then the game changer musicals was the concept musical. And like that's a musical like A Chorus Line, where you take a concept and build it into a show. Pippin, Wicked is another concept musical. A lot of early Sondheim. So, and the only musical I never have directed that I love to do is A Chorus Line. So that's kind of my take on the musicals.
I think I have another idea for you.
Okay.
Got stuff going on in my little head. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. Like I said, we're going to take a break, and we're going to start with your family next in the next 30 minutes. Because that, when you're a great person, you have a great family. So we're going to start with that. Hey everybody, it's Becky Matea again, and it's Good Day NWI on WVLP 103.1 FM, Valparaiso, and my special guest, LAB or Larry Bruckner. We're going to find out what the A stands for. But before we get into his family, I wanted to remind everybody we do have a sharing session coming up again. It is July the 13th over in Lake Station. Everybody is welcome. It's at 5 p.m. And what we do is we bring together everybody in the region to share their 1 minute of very important information. And I bring this up because Larry is a plethora. So we will continue, but mark your calendars for the July 13th. It is before, it's in the middle of, I think we're going to have the fundraiser in June, and then the semi-pro girls softball at the end of the month. So that's coming up in this quarter. But Larry, tell us what the A stands for. Everybody wants to know.
Okay, well, it's Larry Allen Bruckner. And I always, mostly professionally, I always sign with my A. I've always been proud of the Larry A. Bruckner. So even on my diplomas, I never had Larry Allen Bruckner, like most traditional people. I just had the A because I like that. So, and I do something that most people, now in the computer age, it's not as critical. I leave the period off. I just don't like the way it looks. So it's Larry A. without a period Bruckner. So that's a quirky thing for me. So.
Well, I like the lab because, and I know it's not, because I love dogs.
Okay.
But you said it's not really related to that, but you do have a cat, you told me. Okay. So that leads me into your family. Let's start from the top because, with every great person, you have a great family. So start with your beautiful wife.
Okay. Well, she was actually previously married, actually for some time, and I was very seriously dating, and we were just friends doing theater in Highland. I was part of the founding member of the original Main Square Players in Highland, and she was doing shows there, and we became friends. Well, anyway, long story short, her husband left. I broke up with my girlfriend, and we were just hanging together and everything like that, and we can't really point to a date that we started transitioning from friends to, but it happened, over some time. We were hanging out with theater people and doing things together. So, but anyway, in that period of time, about 2 years later, and I'll tell you how I got engaged. I was in the middle of production, and we were going to, it was Valentine's Day, and I had a show opening that weekend, a student-directed show at Highland, and so we were going to go to Kentucky Ports in Chicago. Anyway, so she stopped by the school so we could leave directly from there. Anyway, my student director came and he said, "Lab, the show is in bad shape." I said, "I need to do act two." I said, "Can we do," and this was like a Wednesday, I think, and the show was going to open on either Thursday or Friday. I said, "Can we not?" And he said, "I really need." So I'm thinking, okay, I really have to do that. So we walked down to get a pop, supposedly from the teacher's lounge. And that day that was the smoking lounge too. And this was in the evening. So that was the excuse to get her down there. And I kind of wanted to ask her to marry me on a Valentine's Day. So anyway, in the smelly old teacher's lounge, that's where I asked her to get married. And then I had to go back to rehearsal. Now here's the playback. And my wife said, "Oh no, not here, not in the smelly teacher's lounge, please, not here." But anyway, she always says, "Well, I always knew where I fit in your life, where theater was." But anyway, we became good partners. We got married in 85, and we got married at the Main Square Gazebo, which is where actually we kind of met outdoors. And my theater students actually kind of helped throw the theater party. We invited guests and everything, but all we did is we did kind of a cake and thing reception in right there in the park, you know, so it was that type of thing. So it was somewhat casual. I also helped her pick out her wedding dress. Everyone kind of thought that was horrible, but I said, "You come down the aisle with some darted boob thing." I said, "I'm walking out." So I helped pick out the wedding dress too, because I...
So was this in Highland? Was all this happening in Highland?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, okay. It was in Highland. Okay. So anyway, and then 2 years later...
Well, now it's 38 years, so you did something right, but keep going.
Yeah, and then we had our daughter. Now, see, I also became a step-parent then, and I had a 15-year-old, and people said, "Oh, how's that going to be? That's terrible." "Oh, no, no." And I said, "Oh, no, I think we'll be fine," because we actually got along pretty famously. When her mom and her would butt heads, I would be the one to sit down and chat with her, not undercut what was going on, but anyway, so that worked out with my stepdaughter. But then we had our own kid at 2 years later in 87.
What are their names? What are all these names, Larry?
Well, Jamie is my stepdaughter, and she lives in Kentucky. She is actually a industrial engineer. She's actually doing freelance work. She now lives in and she has made me a step-grandparent. But also then on the other part of that is she now lives in a tiny house by herself, has goats, and then she goes out on things for various businesses and helps them like an efficiency expert, so to speak, and consults and everything like that. So she does.
What's
a lot
your wife's first name?
Carol Lynn. She goes by that. She goes by her that and her middle name. And people who know her from high school just call her Carol because she kind of just went by that moniker. But it seemed like somewhere, even before we got together, she switched to Carol Lynn as her name. So, and then.
Is it Carol Lynn?
Yeah, it's two words. Two words. No, it's two words. Carol Lynn.
Okay. And then you have a stepdaughter, Jamie. And what is your daughter's name?
It's Lauren. Lauren Ashley Breckner. And the story about her name is that we're talking about names. This is long before we really even thinking marriage or anything. And so I like the name Lauren. I like the name Ashley, but not her. Anyway, so we just kind of backburnered that. So then later when we were having a baby, it was like, okay, we never had a guy's name. So this kid had to be a girl. So when she came out, it's like, oh, it's Lauren Ashley Breckner. Without thinking about it, because my nickname for many years has been Lab. I use that as my recording studio name, and that's my initials, obviously. We made a Lab. And we just never thought too much about that.
That is very cute.
But on her own... She developed that as her nickname, except I always sign it as capital L-A-B. She signed it L-A-B. And in school and everything, she signed her papers, Lab Breckner. I mean, everyone knew her as Lab. So anyway, she became my mini Lab. So I guess that was where we were at.
That is really cute. Okay.
She now is grown. She is we have a 2.5-year-old grandson, and she's on the runway to make another one in July. So we'll have, it looks like it's going to be a granddaughter from all the things. So anyway,
I'm wondering if you're going to take them biking, because here I am. I meet Larry a year and a half ago, and then all of a sudden I keep seeing him all around Chesterton. I'm like, So then he lives here, and one of the times you were biking.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about, and you probably will take that up, maybe the tennis into the biking and now, you know, beyond.
Well, I haven't done tennis for a while, and so it's because, you know, just by the nature of it, I haven't had a chance to. You have to find a partner that plays in the same level as you. If you have someone that's really much better or more, much worse, it's not much fun. Anyway, but cycling I can do on my own. I can go out, jump on my bike, and go. And actually, back years ago, I had a seat for my daughter, and I would take her on bike rides with me. And what was funny, she used to kind of make up songs we were going along, like just like, you know, baby songs, like, oh, there's the birdies, and there's a, and it was kind of like my entertainment as we were on the bike. So, but anyway, and then years later, when she started riding a bike, we would have little wireless headsets. So when we go to cross the street, okay, it's okay to cross now. And we talk to each other as we were on the bike. Anyway, so I do cycle now. It's one of my fitness things. I usually do it in like 10-mile increments. I'm not like real doing it, but kind of road cycling, or I'll do with a bike path, and I'll do about 10 miles a time. A couple of years ago, when I went to my doctor, I think it was my first visit with him, I said, well, do you do any exercise? I said, well, this past year I did do some cycling. Oh, yeah, how much? And I said, oh, I think it was about 700-800 miles at 10 miles. You're like, oh, that's pretty good. And
I saw you commenting on somebody else was cycling, and you were like, oh, I did my 7 or 8 miles today. And I'm like, darn, that Larry's up early.
No, well, not today. I usually do 10 miles at a time, so it's because that's my pacing. But anyway, so that's I do cycling kind of as my fitness. I'm a fair weather cycler. So if it's much below 60 degrees or way hot, you're not going to see me out doing that because I don't like the hot, humid weather. But I also want to make it. But anyway, so
do you have a favorite path around here?
Because
we have the new national park.
Well, that's a little ways away. So my thing is, I jump on Indian Boundary. I go. I don't stay on very long. I just get into Porter, where it was Wood World, and I go kind of through Hawthorne Park and everything, and do a cycle. I go all the way down. I remember by Springhouse Inn. You know, I have a whole little cycle that I go double. Anything is kind of goes as far as 20. I think it's I can't remember the name of the little tiny road that I go with. That's my turnaround point. Okay. And then I come back. And then I have another one where I go down the bike path. But anyway, I cut through that, come kind of bit through Porter and Chesterton, and come back. And since now they're doing construction in Yost School, some of my things have been cut off. So I have to I'll go into a parking lot on Walsh and kind of do a couple loops in there to get it rounded up so I can get to my 10 miles. So.
And you do wear a helmet too, don't you?
I'm afraid I don't.
No?
No.
I didn't? You didn't have a helmet on?
No.
I was just like, my kids, you gotta be careful.
I'm very careful, though. You know, I have a little rearview mirror on my glasses. I'm very aware, and I'm not a cyclist that demands the right-of-way. I'm very good about signaling. One of the signals I developed is I point straight ahead when I'm coming to an intersection to indicate that I'm going straight, which a lot of times cyclists don't do. And so, anyway, I'm very, very
careful. Do you ever cycle at night?
I haven't.
Because I can't see people at night, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm well lit at night if I do. Okay. I have lights. Perfect. But I generally would not cycle at total night. I would probably, if it came to dusk or something. But I do have lights on my bike to do that. So.
Okay. So I have this beautiful card from you.
Oh,
here's
okay.
Here's your third area of expertise. New perspectives. That was actually one of my campaign slogans. you do original fine art photography.
Right.
And that takes us into a whole nother realm here, because now we're going to talk about the art gallery, the upcoming art show, Lakeshore Public Media, Art on the Air. That's our next 20 minutes, so don't go anywhere. So tell us about this, Larry.
Okay. Well, photography has always been present in my life. Mostly, you know, as a kid, I started out doing my dad gave me an old 8mm film camera, and I used to shoot film. Actually, I remember shoot the Apollo landing on a tripod, shot the TV, because in that era you didn't know if you'll ever see it again. So I would actually film them walking on the moon off the TV. My first camera was a little roll camera my dad gave me, and I shot some pictures, and I was anxious to see them, so I opened it up to see it, and I said, well, where's my pictures? And he said, it doesn't work that way with film. But as part of being a lighting designer in theater, and doing everything, I had to document that. And later, of course, as a director, to document my shows. So I shot all my things for headshots, publicity, things like that. And I also, along the way, because I interface with actors, did actor headshots and headshots and things like that. Publicity shots and everything. Years later, I did most of my PR shots in front of a green screen, then put the background in later. But my fine art photography involves, you know, like landscape, scenics, nature, still life, buildings, nautical themes. So I do a lot of things, lots of wildlife. Of course, where we live now, we live on Lake Palomora. I go out in the kayak and shoot the wildlife. We have herons, egrets, swans. Actually, the swans have returned this year. So, you know, I do that type of thing. And then I exhibit my photography, and I'm involved with quite a few arts organizations. Then, like the Alien Artists, which is kind of defunct, Hobart Arts League, of course, Southern Shore Arts, which is now defunct. but also Chester and Arts Center, which I'm also a vice chair of the board of directors in South Shore Arts. In fact, I just recently was the one of the facilitators for the grant program for arts grants coming up for that. So
do you have a date on the show coming up, and you've moved it from this one park to another? Tell us the locations, because I always still head to that first park, I think was Hawthorne, and then they're down at Dogwood. But do you have the date on the art show that I saw you at?
You're talking about the Chester Art Festival, and that's the first weekend in August. I don't know the date right in front of me, but whatever the first weekend in August is when that is. And that's we bring – right now we have 92 booths. I'm also involved in getting the entertainment. We'll have Billy Foster Trio there. Several other acts, Patty Schaefer, we're going to have Marco Villarreal, and I'm finishing rounding up our entertainment for that also. So
August the 5th is a Saturday. That's my birthday, so
okay.
I'll have to have some cake while we're
Saturday
there.
And Sunday. So then I'll be there, you know, kind of coordinating the entertainment and everything. So, but anyway, that's coming up. And then I've had
that's part of
Chester and Arts Center.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. You're listening to Good Day NWI/Conversations with Community Voices. I'm Becky Matea with special guest Larry A. Breckner on WVLP 103.1 FM, Valparaiso. So I'm very interested in this other public service that you do is the Lakeshore Public Media, because you're head of the board, Dr. Larry Breckner, and you said you've been there 30 years for the donations, which I would love to do a telethon like Jerry Lewis. Just there's another little thought for you.
Well,
now tell me
more actually, that's how I started there. Yeah, I was in a program called Leadership Northwest Indiana, and I graduated. I was in class 6, which was 92-93, and Jim Walsh, who was the development director at then WYIN, found out that I also, besides my theater, I had, you know, broadcasting credentials. He said, you know, I need to get you on the air, you know, pledging. And within maybe a few months, I was on air, you know, making the pitch for the station. So I started that in 93 and did that for quite a few years, the television pledge. Somewhere around 2000, they dragged me onto the board of directors. And so I've been on the board since about then and worked my way. I've served as secretary, vice chair, and then in the last, I think, 3-4 years, I've been chair of the board. And, of course, part of that process, we added the radio station about 14 years ago. Most of the television pledge now, we do pre-recorded. We don't do, like, the long telethon things. We also did lots of auctions, you know, where we auction stuff off, sports auctions, furniture auctions.
I just found a letter in my office about that. I was like, this is just like kismet. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to be, you know, interviewing Larry. And I wanted to mention what is his title? Chuck Roberts.
Chuck Roberts is our new president and CEO. Our previous one had left to go to California. He's working with the University of Southern California. They have two classical stations and a network of them. And Chuck comes from, well, not directly from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. He actually worked on his MBA. So he comes from a much larger system, but he's going to infuse us with a lot of enthusiasm, brings a whole new fresh face. And like we need all of our president and CEO to go out and shake the money tree, because we are not for profit, and public television and radio is expensive. It's not cheap, you know, to run that. So,
well, I'm going to mention, I have this in my calendar. On the 25th, there is a Lakeshore Media, public media chamber night at the station, right?
That's
What's
true.
The address of the station there?
8585 Indiana Place. And of course, that's in Merrillville. It's just a little ways if you're going down Mississippi Street past the South Lake Mall. And on the right, and you put it in, but you can punch it into any of your GPS, but it's right there. And it's a chance, we call it a ribbon cutting. I said, we're going to wrap our CEO in a ribbon and cut him. I cut it off, I guess.
That would actually be very cute.
But
we could Facebook Live that.
But the idea is that we want the community to meet him. I just had Chuck briefly appear. I had a Zoom meeting with the Regional Arts Council, and I brought him on board just to have a introduce him around. I had him at the Chester Art Gala, which we had this past week and everything. So to get him in the community, I know one of our other board members, Cal Bellamy, who's well-connected, former banker, is taking around to the money lenders and the money tree people in like Lake County and everything like that. So we're trying to get him introduced. He has a great vision for the station. We have some technical issues we're working on, new antenna for the TV, new antenna for that, which gives us better over-the-air coverage because everyone cutting their cable. Over-the-air coverage becomes much more important. And, of course, I'm one of these people, which people are surprised at. I'm a cable never. I except for a short time when I had an apartment, I had it like for a month, and I said, you know, I don't really need this. You have even then you had about 40 channels. And now with streaming, we just And, you know, if you have,
I cut the cord like 3 or 4 years ago because of just the expense, and I get everything I need. And then, like you said, the streaming. I watch all my sports, like Leah at Missouri softball. I just pull it up on the computer.
Right. So you have it. And so I'm real proud of Lakeshore. We are right now in the process of rebranding. Instead of being Lakeshore PBS, well, you know, we went from WYN to Lakeshore. When we brought the radio online, we called it the Lakeshore. But now we went from Lakeshore Public Television to Lakeshore PBS a few years ago and Lakeshore Public Radio. Check once, and we have done this rebranding, bringing everything other under Lakeshore Public Media. And
I think that's a good idea.
So we have one thing, one-stop shopping. So you'll see the transition in our branding, and then you know, we'll just do that. So you hear that on air right now with especially radio, you'll hear them talking about that. And like he says, people will figure out when you say Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM that you're listening to a radio.
And then what's the TV station?
It'll also be Lakeshore Public Media. Everything will be
Lakeshore. And then what's the actual number?
Would
it be channel 56?
Well, yeah, the virtual channel is 56, and we have two channels, 56-1 and 56-2, which is NHK, which is from Japan about things, and they pay us to air their thing. Our actual channel, our broadcast channel is 17, but that's a hidden digital channel. We may get repacked and everything later, but anyway, things are going really well. We have financial challenges, but we have paid down a huge amount of debt, and once we get some of that out of the way, we're looking to really expand our operations and what we're doing.
Well, I've got some ideas for that too, but that leads me right into Art on the Air, because that show you make for
both stations, WVLP.
Right,
and the history of that is it was a program that WVLP had. It was done live in the studio. Melissa Washburn and Greg Hertzfeld were was doing that, and they wanted to get out of doing it. And so my co-host and I had never met each other, so they wanted us to come in as new hosts. And so originally the show was just on WVLP as a local show, but as we have every show except our very first show recorded. So you can hear every show we've done since we started, except for the first one. Somehow that didn't get recorded. Long story short, Esther and I had never met each other. So we have Art's backgrounds. You have my background. She has a completely different. She owns The Nest in Michigan City, which is a
gal. That's where I met her.
Yeah, it's a gal.
They hosted our debate.
Right. A gallery.
A congressional debate.
Yeah, a gallery in a gallery in a like a small performance
studio.
Venue. And it's, unfortunately, that's been closed. It's not closed forever, just right now for COVID and post things. Long story short, then, we have completely different backgrounds. And of course, we did that. Shortly after that, about maybe 6 months or 9 months later, Tom Maloney from Lakeshore wanted to pick up the show. So
another great voice.
And so yes. I had to precisely edit it to 5830, because it meets the NPR standards, so to speak. So I started, we'd do the show live, I'd take it, edit it, and deliver it so he would rebroadcast it on Sunday at 7 p.m., which is our over-the-air time slot. COVID hit, and so they shut down the WVLP studio. So for two shows, we just did a rebroadcast, but then I pulled out some of my equipment, my old recording equipment, and we first used a telephone, and we did telephone interviews. And we did that for maybe about 2 months or so, and I said, "Well, let's try Zoom," and so then we started using that to record our show, and that was a great boon because what it now allows
us—we're doing that right now, which is why didn't we think of Zoom, Larry?
I know, I like it, but anyway, as this has evolved, it allows us to time shift our show, and so we can schedule guests. We usually schedule our recording guests on Tuesdays. I can edit the show. And then we reformatted the show. We used to do like a whole hour interview. And I know people after hearing me for an hour might say, "Oh my gosh, what's this?" But anyway, we broke the interviews into 2 23-minute segments. And then we used to do this crazy calendar that we read on the air. And it took like 15 minutes, and now I'm going to Porter County, blah, blah, blah. And that's boring radio. It's really not exciting radio. So what we did is we substituted that with a spotlight segment. And it's a 7-minute interview that we highlight the different things that are going on. So people come on and talk about whatever the event is or something like that. So 7 minutes, 2 23-minute segments, and plus our intros, outros, and IDs and everything, that's a 5830 show. So we can then schedule guests. The advantage is we can not only time shift it, we can then interview, like I said earlier, people from all over the country, bring in people like from there. about arts, whatever they're doing. So like I said, we brought Woodrow Kellerman in. Recently, if you're an NPR listener, we interviewed BJ Lederman actually twice, who does all the music for NPR shows. And Kenny White, they were doing a concert together. So anyway, that's kind of the... So Art in the Air now is available while it's broadcast on WBP at 11 a.m., on Fridays and repeated on Monday at 5 p.m. Also, a little WDSO who in Chesterton picked it up for Tuesdays. But it's on Lakeshore at 7 o'clock on Sundays. But it's widely available by a link on the Lakeshore site, on our website, and you can get it on like 13, 14 podcast platforms. So we know we're getting out there with our stuff.
So, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you as a guest is because I'm learning a lot. Plus, you are helping me. I was mentioning to Paul over at VLP, I'm like, so I'm scheduling, I'm producing, I'm holding the phones, I'm calling, doing the callers, I'm getting people to the bathroom. So like one of the things that you told me is like, you're going to record and then you're going to like, you know, pull in, add things. So I'm just thankful that you're able to do all of that, because once again, you're in your studio. We are doing I did it at the top and at the bottom, but I think you can just add those in. We'll do the little tags after the show, but I think it's gone very well. And what time are we at? Because it looks like we're closing in on our final half an hour here. I'm going to finish up with a couple of announcements. Okay, so I am going to announce a few other things. If you can't see this, but I'm showing it to Larry on the share session. A couple other things that are happening in the area that I think will help our region. I've also been helping or supporting an initiative with Congressman Mervan. We are trying to get commercial flights out of the Gary Airport. So if you're interested in that as well, 11 a.m., the second Tuesdays of the month, you can either go into the Gary Chicago International Airport, or you can listen by Zoom and just express that that desire. Also, just in the area for your knowledge, I do a Monday and Thursday little class. They're the balance classes. We do a meditation on Mondays and a ballet on envisioning on Thursdays. So if anybody's interested, just email me. I usually go visionquestd2r@outlook.com. And that's about all I have, Mr. Breckner, L.E.B., Larry. I appreciate this very, very much.
Well, very good. Well,
any final thoughts from you?
Well, I hope people listen to Art in the Air. I hope that people support WVLP, and because it's a community station and it requires support of underwriters. If you want to do that, that'd be great. Also, I have to make a plug for Lakeshore. We encourage people to do that. What people don't know, if they become a member of Lakeshore, you get what's called Passport. And Passport is kind of like your PBS version of Netflix, and you have access to all the shows. So for a minimum of $5 a month or $60 a year, you can get Passport and you will have all the shows that you want to access. So you can watch your Novas, everything. You can watch the local content, and we have great local content. We have Eye in the Arts TV, In the Studio, which is our music program, Friends and Neighbors, a lot of other productions. We have the Whitney Reynolds Show. So
how do people do that? How would they sign up for that?
They can go to lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and you can find the donate button. Do it that way. You can call the station to 1-9-756-5656 and become a member today.
All right, everybody. I always end with have a spectacular day. You're listening to Good Day NWI/Conversations with Community Voices. I'm Becky Matea with special guest Larry A. Breckner on WVLP 103.1 FM, Valparaiso.